to the radio. Spear culture and a lick about Molly. Dreaded by the Rootsman radio show. This, that's what the children want. In a universal style. All over Geneva town. They find out Switzerland Isle.
Everybody, welcome to Wiener's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM CIT Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, every Tuesday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. Welcome to another show. I guess that's all there is to say. Lots to get into today. We got basketball talk coming up right now. We got some baseball. BJ Bass, he's our football guy. He'll be with us at 5 o'clock. Dave Chernichan from News 1130, who is currently at the Ed Jovanovski press conference as the Canucks get set to take on the Phoenix Coyotes tonight. Big Jovo's return going on down there. So that is where Dave Chernichan is. He's down there right now, and he's going to come on with us right after the great one, Wayne Gretzky. I think it's nine Hart trophies he won, something like that. He's going to be with us. Dave, not Wayne. Dave will be with us right after the Gretzky press conference at about 5:30. But to get things going right now, tip things off, I guess is the terminology you're supposed to use in this guy's sport, is Vern Knopp from the UBC Thunderbird basketball team, a coaching staff, I have to say, who kind of dissed me at the bar at the hockey game on Friday night. Why? A quick hello, and then no beer. No alcohol was put into my hand by you guys. What happened there, Vern?
Oh, that was probably a misplay on our part. Coach Hansen would have handled that, so normally he's pretty good about doing that kind of thing. But I think he caught us when we were actually on our way out. Actually, we were heading down to one of the suites that were at the game there. So.
Okay, so is this something you're maybe going to work on in the new year?
Something we definitely obviously have to work on now, apparently, now it's been brought to our attention. Usually, we're as a coaching staff, we're pretty good about taking care of people. But
yeah, I mean, you know, you
obviously
got...
that one, we slipped up on that one there. So
yeah, you
my apologies.
Attaboy. Vern Knopp from the UBC Thunderbird men's basketball team with us right now. So, Coach, you're practicing right now. You guys are 11-0, the number two team in the country. Everything's going smooth. But you don't play another conference game for, I think it's less than a month now. You got about 3 weeks before your next conference game. You're going to be playing SFU in a home-and-home Jan 5, Jan 6. You've got an exhibition tournament right around the end of the new year, but how do you keep things going right now? These guys aren't playing. They've got exams time. What do you do as a coaching staff right now?
Well, a coaching staff right now, actually, as we speak, Coach Hansen's in Calgary doing on a recruiting trip as well. So we kind of take care of, get a chance to go to as many high school games in the province and other provinces to see other players that may be interested in that we may be interested in having come to UBC and find out what their interest is. During our season, once January comes, it's really tough for us to get out to a lot of the high school games. So the last couple of weeks, we've been able to see a lot of players play that we normally don't get a chance to see. So it's been kind of what our focus is on as far as the coaching staff goes for the month of December. We actually still are practicing, although practices are kind of a little different now. We have a lot of guys writing exams, studying for exams, so we don't always have our full roster of practice, but. We still try to keep them, as good a shape as possible. I mean, it's frustrating for them because there's no more games. They'll go about a month without games almost. So stuff like that and preparing for the upcoming games in January, which is probably the toughest part of our schedule.
Yeah, Vern, I want to get to your team in a second, but back to the recruiting right now is, Does it put you guys in a disadvantage? I'm sure you were at the HSBC Classic on the weekend, I'm sure, right here at War Gym. But let me ask you, is the BC High School Championships, if all goes well for you guys this season, I think it coincides directly with when you guys were off at the national tournament. So you're probably not even going to be able to see any of these players in the biggest stage of BC High School basketball.
Yeah, it's kind of, it seems like every other year it's that case. I know in years past we've been fortunate enough to actually be around when it's been the week before we've gone to nationals and whatnot, but it seems like this year, that does coincide. But, you know, by then it's, we pretty much have a good indication of who we're going after already. Like we've pretty much designated a few players that we've been going after the last year or two already. So we've kind of identified them. At that point, we kind of know what we're expecting as far as the players go. So the provincial tournament kind of helps finding out maybe teams from the island that you don't get to see as often or other players. I mean, there's always kids that come out of the woodwork kind of thing, especially grade 11 kids. So it is a bit of a disadvantage, but, you know, it's one of the things that you don't mind giving up just because it means you're going to the national championship finals again. So you know, we'll take that anytime.
And how hard is it to evaluate a high school basketball player? Because I see it all the time, just reading these big U.S. schools. These guys get these top-notch high school guys. I mean, it's different now that all the top high school kids down there, they used to be going to the pros. Now they got to go back to the 1 year of college before they can go pro. But you see these guys, and I remember the one that got me was Felipe Lopez from St. John's. He was supposed to be this great player, and by the time he came to Vancouver, he was nothing, didn't have a great college career. Is it really hard to grasp a high school basketball player, how he's going to go to your collegiate game? Can you tell that much?
Well, you never really know until you get them in your system, but you know, it's kind of our job to see enough of them to have a pretty good idea where they're going to fit. We've been, you know, and we're a fortunate situation now where recruiting-wise, we don't expect first-year players to usually come in and start with us right away. In fact, you know, very few players have. Even going back to Casey Archibald's first year, he didn't start for us right off the bat. Ended up starting for us. I think he started something like 11 league games. But we haven't even had a first-year player do that for us in a long time. They get minutes, but because of the depth we've had over the years, we've been, you know, fortunate enough where we don't expect players to come in and step in right away. But it can be tough. Sometimes, depending on, you know, you try to recruit players that you feel are suited to the kind of style that you want to play. Because once you get there, you can try to mold them to how you play things. But it's not always the easiest thing. So it can be tricky sometimes, but that's kind of our coaches. That's our job to make sure we don't make those mistakes.
And Vern, from a recruiting standpoint, getting character players in here at UBC, is it easier to know that if you're not going to get two bad kids because they need such good marks to get to this school? So you at least know that they're good at that, and that probably says a lot about their character. Does that make it easier for you guys?
Oh, no question it does. I mean, always the first question we ask recruits, how are your grades? Usually, you know, we kind of always get a shy look from them, but most of the time, if we can get the kid in, good grades, it does make things. You know, he's obviously a smart person. One of the things we always tell our recruits, though, is we don't just recruit the player, we recruit the entire family. We really like to get to know the parents a lot, to find out. It's a whole everything. It's not just whether you can play basketball, get good grades. It's how does your personality gel with the coaches and the coaches with the families as well. And we've been very fortunate with the players that we've recruited in the last 7 years that, for the most part, the families, the parents and brothers and sisters have actually, you know, fit in really well with the program as well.
Yeah, recruiting a huge part of the college game. You can't overlook it. Have you guys ever been burned where a player says he's going to, I mean, you can give me a name if you want, but don't worry if you don't want to. Have you ever been burned by that? A player said he committed to come to you guys, didn't sign all the official documents yet, though. You know, you got to wait for that, and then you're counting on him to come, and then before you know it, he has gone somewhere else?
Yep, it actually hurt us 2 years ago. I won't mention his name, but there were two guards we were going after, point guards we were going after, and the one had committed to us first, and then 2 weeks later did an about-face and decided he was going to go to a junior college down south. And that kind of hurt us because as he committed to us, the other player decided to go to another school. So instead of getting either of the players, we got neither of them. Unfortunately, that does happen. You know, you always lose, you know, when we recruited Jacob Dirksen, that was one of the, you know, the top recruits. Everybody in Canada was pretty much recruiting him. You know, he never made it. He promises, you know, we for both teams, and when he made his decision to go to UVic, it was tough for us to take, but yet you have to move on. But for the most part, it doesn't happen too often, but every now and then there is a player that will make commitment, and that's part of the problem with basketball in Canada is that there is no letter of intent to sign. So it's a verbal agreement, and the kid can renege on that at any time he wants, so that can cause troubles for some teams down the road. But something we have to deal with, and you just hope that you've done a good enough job where you don't get burned by that.
But, Vern, also, you know, you're talking to a 17, 18-year-old kid. I mean, you know, you can understand if a guy like that does change his mind. I mean, he doesn't exactly. He might not know what he wants to do. He might look at a situation, feel different. I mean, you are dealing with kids at that age, so it does probably make it easier to take that. You know that's the kind of game you're playing.
Oh, no question. I mean, we always tell the recruits that it's probably one of their toughest decisions they have to make in their life. You're picking a school that you're probably going to be playing for 4 or 5 years at. And I think over the years, that's why it's really tough to keep players happy for that long. It's hard. That's why you see over the years, you see so many kids transferring schools. They just get stale or just get frustrated where they're just the way things are going, whether they're not winning or they're not getting enough playing time to their liking. So they end up figuring there's always greener pasture somewhere else kind of thing, right? So it is a tough decision for a 17, 18-year-old to make. You know, we take that into account, but, you know, like I said, you know, you have to at some point be a grown-up about it and make that tough decision, and hopefully it's the right decision that they admit that they make.
So is this, I don't know, you break it down for me here, from Handsworth, is it Rob Saker? How do I pronounce this name? Do I have the right
kid? Yep, the big 6'7", 7 footer from Handsworth, yep.
Yeah, okay, what's the story? Is this kid the big recruit coming out of high school in BC this year, or is there some other names?
He actually last year already committed to going to University of Gonzaga.
Okay. Oh, yeah, that's right, sure.
So he's going down there, and once he does make a verbal commitment, we won't, you know, we usually call him and congratulate him, but we won't actually have any further, other than just saying hi and how you doing, and we have any talks with that player just because he's technically another school's property already.
So who are the big recruits coming out? Can you give us names or no?
Well, yeah, other than Rob Zachary, there's a few others. There's Denny Dumas that plays at St. Thomas More, grade 12, kind of a point guard, off guard, one of the best shooters in the province. Another guard who's kind of a combination one point guard, off guard, is Jordan Yu. You might recognize that name. It's the younger brother of one Jordan Yu, who just finished his career with us last year.
Yep.
Playing at Vancouver College. In fact, they just won the HSBC on Saturday night as well against Handsworth and Rob Zachary. And Jordan Nathan Yu had 19 points. The other guy that's out there is Graham Bath. He's one of the top post players in the province. Played on all three of these guys have played on the provincial team for the past couple of years. Graham's a 6'7" post player from Brookswood, also former teammate of one of our current members, Brent Malish. Those are a couple of guys anyway, and there's a few more out there as well, but I won't get into all the names there.
Yeah, no, cool. And Vern, one last question on this one is that a guy though, Rob? Saker or Sakra? How do I pronounce it here?
Sakra.
Is that a guy, if, you know, you guys do get to go the NCAA Division I route, kind of player you can't keep here on the campus?
Yeah, that's, you know, one of the huge factors. If we do go to the NCAAs, we get accepted. You know, we'd actually have an option of, because we could give full-ride scholarships to guys. I mean, Rob would be a guy that we probably would have had a chance of maybe keeping down here. I think the style we play would have fit into what he does, and that's the hard part of what it is with UBC keeping all our top athletes in like locally in the province, or keeping them at least in Canada. We just can't offer them the full ride scholarship as the U.S. schools can. So if we get accepted into the NCAAs, then that definitely increases our chance of not just keeping our best kids in BC, but keeping the top players in Canada. Period.
And recruits know about the Div 1 too, don't they? They've read the papers.
Oh yeah, the recruits, all the high school guys. From even kids in grade 8 and grade 9 already talking about, you know, they see it on TV. The exposure the NCAA gets on TV on a weekly basis. All these kids know about it. It's amazing how much they know about the schools. You know, unfortunately, they just read the good, hear the good stuff. They don't actually realize that a full ride scholarship can be revoked at any time down in the NCAAs. Where here at UBC, once we commit to a kid for 5 years, at least with his, we can pay for paying for his tuition, you know, we're guaranteeing that for the next 5 years kind of thing. So when we do go after a recruit, so it's a little different down there, and you do see guys every now and then that go down to the States, and they're given a full-ride scholarship, but after 1 year, didn't work out. They were redshirting. They didn't develop how the team wanted. The team just takes it away, and usually those players end up coming back home or trying to find other schools to play for.
Awesome. Vern now from the UBC basketball team. Vern, one last question here. So UBC, you know, we did a lot of recruiting. I was actually quite interested in that. But Vern, you guys going to play your – when you got a tournament at the very end of the new year in Victoria?
Yep, against Victoria. We play Concordia and Queens, two teams back east.
Awesome. So really the question is, I mean, you know, we've gone over your team all year, and you guys have obviously had a great season thus far, but is it really broken up into two seasons? I mean, this sort of has to be tough. I mean, for what you did, by the time you play, I'm sure, at the beginning of January, for what you did at the very end of November, it's over now, isn't it? You're really starting again with these guys, aren't you?
Yeah, you know, it really is. That, in fact, the second half of the season, I like to kind of think it's broken up into, the season itself is kind of broken up into three different seasons. We just finished playing our first season. Now we have the next, I believe it's 11, 12 games coming up in January and early February. And then once those games are done, you start your third part of your season, which is the playoffs, and that's where it's brand new there. Whatever you did in the regular season means absolutely nothing once you're in the playoffs, because anything can happen in a three-game series, or as we find going to nationals in a one-on-one game, anything can happen, and it really is divided up into three different parts.
Awesome. The big guys I'm watching again. You guys had a beauty December 2nd, I believe it was, or December 3rd, I'm sorry, it was here at UBC, January 19th, 20, Victoria. And I got to say, Vern, you beat them by 5 points, but Victoria, there's a lot that they did wrong in that game. Free throw shooting, the fact Graham Bollinger didn't have any points, took forever to get Jacob Dirksen going. Chances are when you go to Victoria, they are going to be a better basketball team. You guys are going to have to play better than you did to beat them, I'm guessing.
No question. Everybody is 10 points better at home, and that's kind of the approach we take when we're on the road, is that we're down 10 points to start the game. You don't get as many necessarily calls, but they're in their own gym where they're used to shooting all week long. A lot of those players have grown up playing in that gym, so it'll be a much tougher contest, and we're going to have to be on top of our game to get the two wins down there.
Awesome. Look forward to it. Vern, thanks for doing this as always. We'll talk to you soon, and next time, buy me that beer.
I will do that for sure, and thanks for having me on the show.
No, get Kevin Hansen to buy me the beer.
Get Kevin to buy you the beer. That's...
Put it on the tap. Thanks, Vern.
Thank you.
All right, that was Vern Knopp, assistant coach for the UBC Thunderbirds men's basketball team, currently sitting at number 2 in the entire country. 11-0, not too shabby. They got 9 games to go, and then they got the tournament. We don't really know. We're doing a game. Next Thunderbird men's basketball team will be January 6th. I don't know if we're doing January 5th. There's something that happened with another station. We just don't know where the cards are going to fit right now. We're going to keep our hand. We've got the January 6th game in the new year versus SFU, January 19th and 20th versus Victoria. We're doing a game February 3rd in Saskatoon. Sam Charles used to do the women play-by-play for us, would fill in for the men. Probably do a better job than me, but when I didn't do it, Sam filled in. He's going to be doing some road games for UBC basketball in Saskatoon. That'll be fun. And then we're doing February 9th at the end of the year versus Thompson Rivers, I believe. So we're guaranteed that we will be doing, that's 5 of the 9 remaining UBC Thunderbird men's basketball games. Don't know what's happening with the playoffs. Would like to fit in 1 or 2 more. So we might even be doing 7 of the last 9, which would be pretty cool. But we'll just wait and see how the chips do fall as they may. I don't know. That was a voice I did. All right. Let's get on with the show here. As I said, on Wiener's Barbecue here today. And what's kind of a lowly day out there in Vancouver? I don't know. I'm a little droopy this week. And I'm going to talk to BJ about this. I don't know about you. I don't know about you, but what would you do, okay? How do I get around this? It was 11:30 at night last night, and the last Boy Scout came on like Channel 38. And what's with Channel 38? I don't understand this. Is they show movies without commercials allowing swear words. And it's on Channel 38. Now, I'm all for that. Blues Brothers is my example here. Love the movie. I can't watch it with when they edit out the swears. I can't watch a movie like that. Really, Spaceballs. It just annoys you because you know it should be funnier than the joke you just got to hear. I don't know. I did, however, as I've gone off track here, and I'm going to stay off track, I don't know if anybody's ever seen it. And maybe I could find a clip on the old YouTube. But I bought for $10 on eBay. Came yesterday. I got it yesterday. A poster of Amazon women on the moon. I don't know if you've ever seen that one, but I say it's a must rent. I say it's a must rent. I've seen it many, many, many times more than that. But, yeah, I'm sort of on YouTube. They don't even have anything for Amazon. Oh, yeah, they got a couple here. They got a couple here. There's the Arsenio Hall one. What a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful movie. Anyway, that's all I got to say on that one. Okay, you are listening to 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, Wiener's Barbecue, brought to you every Tuesday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. They're actually talking about getting us advertising here on CITR. The goal was January. I don't know where we're at right now with that, but, you know, that was sort of a moment where you're listening to 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, brought to you by, and I'd say something, but I could get in trouble for saying it. Al's Pizza. Can't get in trouble because I don't even... It probably does exist. Definitely exists somewhere, Al's Pizza. And if it doesn't, there's a name for your restaurant. But I doubt, you know, I'm not really talking about anybody. Anyways, it's going to be kind of neat in the new year when we're going to be saying stuff like that. Al's Pizza. This segment is brought to you by Bill's Car Rental. You know, all that kind of jazz. Anyways, coming up on the show... At 5 o'clock, in about 7 minutes' time, we are going to be going to Las Vegas, Nevada. BJ Bass is going to be with us, my Las Vegas guy, to talk about football. BJ's been coming on a lot lately, and I always do appreciate it. And I'm going to talk to BJ about it. Is watching The Last Boy Scout yesterday with Damon Wayans and Bruce Willis. You ever see it? The football movie? It kind of lost me. There was just too much killing. Too much... They were too happy at the end for how many people had died during the movie. Bruce Willis is dancing. The family's never been closer. Damon Wayans is at peace with himself. But, like, Halle Berry just got shot up at the very beginning. Ooh, she was gorgeous in it. But, you know, it was all the innocent people who got killed in that movie. It was just a little too much. One of the guys, actually, the car flipped into his pool. He was actually in The Burbs with Tom Hanks. Yeah, just throwing it out there. Just throwing it out there. Anyways, Blast Boy Scout, big part of it was sports gambling and how they wanted to knock out the... They wanted to legalize sports gambling to help the popularity of pro football. This was part of... This is what the bad guys wanted to do. In the movie The Last Boy Scout with Damon Wayans, Halle Berry, and Bruce Willis. And what they did is, you know, they were going to kill a senator and try to buy him off. And, of course, they're killing lots of people. And, of course, Bruce Willis saved the day. You know, then he did the little jig at the end after lots of people had died. It was a little disrespectful. but I do remember it from when I was younger seeing that movie. Anyways, I thought I did. Anyways. Back to what I'm saying is what I found interesting is the bad guys in this movie wanted to legalize sports gambling. You know, they wanted the senators in their pocket. So it put the bookies out, you know, not put the bookies out of business per se, but that would be, you know, people would be able to legally bet on sports and it would give them reason to watch. That was what the bad guys wanted to do in the movie, The Last Boy Scout. So my question is going to be for BJ, who lives in Las Vegas, Nevada, is this, you know, I don't know if it's a problem, but is this why people watch sports, especially football? And Damon Wayans brought it up in the movie. Granted, I'm quoting stuff from The Last Boy Scout here, but Damon Wayans brought it up. You know why if NFL's the only one that gives you injury reports like days before the game so the bookies can set their spreads? Just saying, it's what the bad guys are trying to accomplish in The Last Boy Scout. It's what's happened in real life. Granted, sports gambling is not legal. It is in Nevada, but it's always been legal in Nevada, even during The Last Boy Scout's time. But, you know, pretty much, we can go to the corner stores. Our government takes our money, a little sports action. You can go online anytime, do a little sports gambling. Did the guys in The Last Boy Scout win? did they win. Anyways, lots going on in the world of baseball right now. And as a Dodger fan, I lost one of my guys today. Eric Gagne, former Cy Young Award winner, has agreed to a one-year, $6 million deal with the Texas Rangers. Now, you may be asking why I said it like that. Why I said it. You know, a former Cy Young Award winner agreeing to a one-year, $6 million deal with the Texas Rangers. Well, this is just, I'm not saying Texas made a bad signing here because baseball owners and players are just raking in a bundle now, so what do I know? However, here's what $6 million gets you for 1 year in baseball right now. Granted, you are an ex-Cy Young Award winner, and between 2002 and 2004, you had an ERA of 1.79. Okay. And a Cy Young in there to boot. Eric Gagne, in the last 2 years, is 9-for-9 in save opportunities. Not bad for a middle reliever. He's pitched 15 and a third innings. 15 and a third innings in the last 2 years. And he gets a one-year, $6 million contract for past exploits. No? Little weird? That's what these guys are getting. There's the Ted Lilly contract, 15-game winner, 4.31 ERA for the Blue Jays. His numbers were something like that. 4 years, $44 million from the Cubs. Gil Mesh, 5 years, $55 million from the Kansas City Royals. Oh, it's Kansas City. Going to regret that signing pretty shortly. I mean, Gil Mesh, I think he won 11 games last year for the Seattle Mariners. Never really done that much at all. And he gets that kind of money. So, you know, baseball salaries have gone completely cuckoo. And my question is, you know, they're raking in this money. They're getting this kind of TV money. And they're sending, oh, Gil Mesh, Ted Lilly, it says here 4 years, $40 million. I thought he got more, but I'm sure he's cool. 15 and 13 with a 4.31 ERA. Never thrown 200 innings in his life. He's 30 years old, and he's 59 and 58 lifetime. Now, the way it works, too, is you basically, when a guy's 29 or 30, this is sort of what it was pre-steroid era, at least, is you would double a guy's stats, and that's pretty much what his career stats would be. So Ted Lilly gets a $40 million deal for 4 years, and he's on pace, based on that formula I just said, completely non-scientific, to go 118 and 116 in his career. Gil Mesh, 28 years old, went 11-8. I was right, 11-8 last year with a 4.48 ERA. Decent. He's got 55 wins and 44 losses. Granted, Gil Mesh does have maybe more upside than Lilly. Both of them were hotshot prospects at one point, if I recall correctly. But, I mean, you know, Gil Mesh, his best, you know, looking year was the year 2000, the only time he's had an ERA below 4.59. This is in one of his 6 years, and he only threw 85 innings and two-thirds that year, had an ERA of 3.78, struck out 60 and 85 and two-thirds. That's his best year ERA-wise. He won 15 games in 2003 with 130 strikeouts, 63 walks, 4.59 ERA, and 186 and a third innings. That's his best year, and that earns you $55 million on the baseball free agent market. Another thing going on in baseball right now, and I don't know if you guys have heard about this, is the Boston Red Sox bid for a pitcher. They bid for the rights to a pitcher. They gave a Japanese baseball team $51 million. They won the rights to him. They gave the Japanese baseball team $51 million. To sign Daisuke Matsuoka? Matsuoka? Matsuoka. Daisuke Matsuzaka. Anyways, he's this big Japanese pitcher. He's apparently great. And the Red Sox gave his team 51 and a third innings for the right to negotiate with this guy. And what's happening is the Red Sox now have just over 24 hours to sign Matsuoka. I don't know if I have the pronunciation right, Matsuzaka, to a contract. And if they don't, the Japanese team, the Cebu Lions, will get him back. And they have to refund the Red Sox the money. And what that means is, I mean, this is what sort of what I read. They think he's going to sign. It would cost the Japanese economy $20.65 million in tax money. I don't know. Anyways, just another insanity thing. This guy basically wants a 50-year, five-year deal from the Red Sox, and that means Boston would be paying a guy who's never pitched an inning of Major League Baseball in his life $100 million for 5 years. Pretty crazy. Anyways, that's baseball free agency. Season's not for a while, but everybody's making a lot of money there. More than me. Anyways, we are going to take a break right now. BJ Bass from Nevada, Las Vegas will be with us when we get back. You are listening to Wiener's Barbecue on 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, every Tuesday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. We'll be right back after this song.
Daddy, Daddy, it's Roots Mondrez.
My roots, my chin. Got that roots. When it's late and the breeze is blowing, listening to the radio, spear culture and a lick of Molly. Dreaded by the roots, my radio show. Yes, that's what the children want. In a universal style, all over Geneva town, the banyard Switzerland dial, and make them listen for a while. Out on the cobblestone streets, all over Europe town, Rootsman, you make it go around. On Rasta Avenue. But it's been a year since last I seen that seeds you sow. Oh, the seeds that you sow so long ago.
Okay, everybody, welcome back to Wiener's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM. BJ Bash from Nevada, Las Vegas is online, and he says I'm, what was it, good Lord, you're loud?
Indeed, indeed.
Awesome, BJ. Let's get into some national. How's the weather down there, actually?
It's all right, a little chilly. We're doing okay, though.
Yeah, better than up here, although our water is drinkable again.
Oh, you're not showering in the brown water anymore?
Not showering. No, that was actually over last week.
You guys are moving up in the world.
Yeah, we're moving up in the world. We have the Olympics coming here in 4 years, so we got to get the city all cleaned up.
Sounds like they're doing a great job.
Awesome. Beach, let's get into National Football League talk right now. And, you know, the one that has you going and you were waiting to find out if they're for real, and they are. I think it's done now after Sunday Night Football. The New Orleans Saints, 42-17 over the Atlanta Falcons. Both Drew Brees, Reggie Bush, wow. Those guys get wow for how they looked on Sunday night.
Yeah, no, an absolute ass-kicking on Sunday night. You know, I mean, listen, how many times this season have I said to you, I don't know if they're for real? And, you know, like you just said, I think we now know they're for real. Drew Brees is unbelievable. You know, and the way that they're playing football is fantastic. It's great to see, isn't it? A Saints team that's actually winning.
And Reggie Bush, 79 receptions in his rookie season, 405 passing yards. He's got 6 touchdowns this season. Actually, I think he's got kick return touchdowns, too. Yeah, he's got the 1 punt return, so give him 7 touchdowns this season. this guy has been as advertised. I mean, that one little screen pass that he turned into about a 65-yard touchdown run, that was the wow factor right there.
Yeah, and, you know, we had talked a little bit last week about how, you know, the Texans have to be kicking themselves. And, you know, this week we really saw a bunch of players that the Texans passed on all really step up. I mean, look at Vince Young, too. At home in Houston against the Texans in overtime, that's got to hurt as well. And then they get home, they turn on the TV, and then it's Reggie Bush on Sunday night. So, you know, the Texans still say that they're happy with Mario Williams, that that they needed help on the defensive line, and he's brought that to the team. But, you know, I mean, how could you pass on talents like this? And so, you know, Vince Young and the whole thing with Houston and his hometown and, you know, Texas, where he went to university, you got to figure there's some people that aren't too happy in the Texans front office today.
Well, BJ, I'm just going to throw this out here. The last time Houston took a hometown guy, and you couldn't blame him for it, was one of the great college basketball players of all time. They took Hakeem Olajuwon over Michael Jordan when Olajuwon went to the University of Houston. Houston. Rockets, I'm talking about.
Would that be are you saying that was a bad pick?
No, they won two titles with Olajuwon, but they did pass on Michael Jordan. Although
Hakeem the Dream.
Hakeem the Dream. Well, yeah, get into Vince Young here, BJ. This is three wins in a row for the Texans, three awesome wins in a row. They have the big – this is like – actually, it's about two games in a quarter. They've been playing out of sight right now. They have the big fourth quarter comeback versus the New York Giants. They pull off the game versus the Colts last weekend. We'll get to them in a minute. And then Vince Young goes into Houston, gets the winning touchdown, runs it in from 39 yards in overtime. Is this guy, I mean, he's passing the ball too, 19 for 29, 218 yards. Didn't have a touchdown, but he runs for 86 yards. Is this the guy who Atlanta thought they were getting when they got Michael Vick? Is this the actual guy who can run and throw the ball?
Yeah, it kind of looks that way, doesn't it? I mean, he you know, the whole knock on Vince Young coming out of college was that, you know, is he can't throw the ball. Is he really, you know, an NFL quarterback? And then obviously, you know, kind of the whole intelligence factor when he flunked the Wonderlific test or whatever it is. But, you know, it certainly looks that way. Michael Vick is just way too quick to run, too quick to pull the ball down and get the hell out of the pocket. I can understand that because none of his receivers will catch the ball. However, that being said, it's something he's always had an issue with. Vince Young just seems very systematic in the way that he goes through his options, he goes through his receivers, but yet he's quick to pull the ball and run when he needs to get out of that pocket. It's really early, and it's obviously really early in his career, but it really does kind of look like he is the guy that everyone thought Michael Vick was going to be, you know, the Michael Vick experience. Certainly looking that way. And you know, once again, you know, we kind of applauded Jeff Fisher last week a little bit, and let's give him some more love this week. Jeff Fisher and the offensive coordinator Norman Chow doing a great job with this kid, and I think that Fisher's definitely saved his job. Vince Young looks like he's for real.
And this was a team, Tennessee, they're now 6-7 right now, who we said, I think they were underdog versus the Colts at one point this year. It was like minus 18, and we thought they might be a minus 25, 27 at some point in the season and not cover. That's how bad it looked like things were going for this team.
And meanwhile, now I'm looking at maybe taking them next week.
There you go. Well, we talked about the big win versus the Colts, and I just can't understand this team. I can't understand how they lose. It really surprises me.
Wiener, I told you, man, they ain't got no heart, man. The team has no heart. They have another chance to clinch the division. I understand it's on the road. I understand it's in Jacksonville. You know, a team that does not like the Colts in the least bit. But you have a chance to clinch a title, and you're going to let a team, you know, run 350 yards on you. Alvin Perlman almost had a 100-yard rushing against the Colts. I mean, to come out and look like that and to really get your ass kicked like that, that to me is a huge indication of you know, what this team is not capable of more than what they are capable of. And, you know, I, I, I don't know what it is with that team of why they can't click and why they can't get, you know, like a Patriots kind of feeling about them or a Saints kind of feeling where it just seems like it's a team and everyone's playing together. You know what I'm saying? You'll get that from them. And, you know, why it is, I don't know. But, again, I don't think the Colts are going to do much. I think they're going to make the playoffs. And I think that, you know, they're not going to make the Super Bowl once again.
BJ, I just want to say these numbers for Jacksonville running backs, and then we'll move on quickly. Alvin Pierman, 13 rushes, 71 yards, a touchdown. That's pretty much a number one running back day for a lot of teams. Fred Taylor, only 9 carries, 131 yards, and a touchdown of 76 yards. Not bad. Oh, I'm sorry. He had a 76-yard run. Didn't run in it all the way. They caught him at the end, I guess. Maurice Jones-Drew, 15 carries, 166 yards, 2 touchdowns, and he also returned a kick, 93 yards for a touchdown. They got what pretty good there. But moving on.
I mean, the Colts have now lost 3 of their last 4 football games.
Yeah.
I mean, something's going on there in Indy. Something's wrong.
I'm always surprised. Always surprised when they lost. Back to when Peyton Manning went into New England in that playoff game, I think it was 2 years ago now, and he had the touchdown record that season. What did he throw, 49 touchdowns that year?
Right, right.
And then he goes into New England, and they shut him down. I have always been surprised. Although San Diego beating him at the end of the regular season last year, losing to the Steelers, I'm always surprised when they lose.
Well, and now looks like Brandon Stokley's out for the year.
Yeah, well, we'll see what goes on there. Chicago, keeping it going. The Bears are now 11-2. They looked a little iffy in the first half yesterday against the Rams, but Devin Hester, 94-yard kick return, 96 kick return, now has the NFL record for kick returns in a season with 6, doing his Dante Hall impression. He's not as cool looking as Dante Hall was. You were at the game. Dante Hall had that insane one, actually, weren't you?
Yeah, no, I was. A little bit of a different kind of play. I mean, this guy's just got speed, man. You know, the way he hit that hole, you know, last night and was gone, was pretty incredible. I mean, you know, we talked last week about how, you know, special teams and defense is winning for the Bears, and Rex Grossman is just doing what he has to do to get the job done. And, you know, once again, we saw the defense step up, and obviously special teams make a huge contribution to that win. And you got to figure Lovie Smith had to be getting really close to pulling the plug on Grossman in the first half. Just didn't look good at all. And it was a close game, and it, you know, looked like the Rams could make a run out of it. And you got to figure Lovie had his trigger finger itching, and then, you know, look what happens, and all of a sudden, you know, Rex Grossman is still the starting quarterback of the NFC North champion. So, you know, once again, special teams and defense are doing it for the Bears. Grossman doing what he needed to do. Obviously, looked a lot better in the second half. You know, it's the Bears, man.
Well,
this
kid
is unbelievable, though. I mean, you know, it's 6 returns for touchdowns.
Yeah.
4 of them being kickoff returns or something like that. He has a punt and a field goal return as well, correct?
Yeah, and here's the thing with the kickoff returns, too. I just want to pull off his stats here. He has only returned, the computer's a little slow here. I think he's only returned, here's the number. He has only returned 10 kickoffs this season. Two of them, he's got 2 kickoff returns for touchdowns, and he's only returned 10 this season. So he's 1 for 5 returning them, taking them back. So there's your stat right there. And that missed field goal, which might be the play of the year, or one of the plays of the year, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Rex Grossman, 13 for 23, 200 yards, 2 touchdowns. Good numbers there, no picks, but, you know, the Rams are coming from behind and having to shut them down. It's tough having to shut down the running game, too. But the thing is with the Bears, looks like they've already clinched a first-round bye. Looks like they're going to get home field advantage throughout. They got a 2-game lead on New Orleans. Don't know who wins the tiebreaker, so it's a game and a half minimum with only 3 to go. Going into Chicago, and we saw New Orleans kick ass in Dallas on the weekend, but you put them in a windy, snowy day, mucky field, rainy, whatever it is, in Chicago in January, I don't think they're going to be able to be running those kind of plays against that Bears defense. The Bears in the playoffs with home... Yeah.
Go on, sorry.
Bears with home field advantage in the playoffs, I don't think you can take anybody to beat them.
Yeah, they're going to be really tough, especially at home. And obviously, you know, when it comes to playoff football, like you said, you know, in January, Soldier Field, the snow, the wind, the cold, that cold wind coming off Lake Michigan, you're looking at a much different Bears team. You're looking at a team that plays a lot differently. I mean, they're not going to win games in the playoffs, you know, by putting, you know, 40 points on the board. You're looking at a lot kind of lower scoring games just because the playoffs and everything tightens up a bit. And you know, I mean, those are the games that I think the Bears can win with Rex Grossman. What the problem is going to be is if somebody comes in and starts really putting points on the board and really challenging the Bears' offense to do something on their own and to get something done and to really play a role in a victory, is I think where things might start getting a little difficult for Chicago. But, you know, I can't think there's probably one team in the league that wants to go play in Soldier Field in January in the playoffs.
And BJ, we mentioned Dallas, who got absolutely destroyed by the New Orleans Saints on Sunday night. Keeping it going with the NFC East right now. Philadelphia pulls off a big win. They are now 2-1, I'm sorry, with Jeff Garcia at quarterback. And that loss was to the Colts, where they didn't get blown out. Garcia and company put up a little bit of a fight on Monday Night Football. And the New York Giants going to Carolina, wipe out the Panthers. Philly and the Giants, I don't think any of these teams are going to the Super Bowl, Dallas neither, but suddenly the NFC East, we've got a race there again suddenly, and the Giants and Eagles will play this Sunday.
Yeah, and listen, you know, I'll admit when I'm wrong, I said that, you know, I think the Eagles are done now that McNabb's season was over, and they're showing a lot of resiliency and playing well under Garcia and you know, buying into what Andy Reid is, whatever he's telling them. I'm sure it's something along the lines of, okay, Donovan's done. Are we done too? And they're playing some great football. You know, last week we talked about how the Giants-Panthers game, you know, it really kind of looked like the winner was going to get a playoff spot, the loser wouldn't. I would say the same thing this week of Giants-Eagles. You know, looks like the winner of that game might get into the playoffs and the loser might not. It's going to be a great game. I'm going to go with the Giants. I think they're a better football team than they've been playing of. And all of these guys that were hurt, you know, we were talking about the tough schedule and it's wearing down and all these guys are getting hurt. And, you know, they were missing a 1.45 starters on the defensive side of the ball. Now all these guys are coming back. And so now the Giants are starting to look a lot healthier. Obviously, Amani Toomer's done for the year. He's not going to come back. I don't know that he's, you know, how much of a role he really plays, you know, for the Giants. You don't want to give up on the Giants, do you? I mean, it's like one of these things. It's Eli and Tiki and Shockey and all of these guys, and it's, I don't know, it's like a team you almost want to root for. That's kind of, you know, the way I feel. Obviously, you know, you're an Eagles fan, so this week you're not going to be rooting for the Giants. But you know, I think the Giants get it done. I think that, you know, having them go into Carolina and really control that football game meant a lot for that team, and it meant a lot not only on the stat column and, you know, getting that win, getting that W, staying competitive in the playoff race, but also mentally and for the team and for the locker room. You know, they had a real rough run of it with those four losses, and some of them definitely weren't pretty, but I think that things could start coming together for the Giants, and I think we will see them make the playoffs.
And the other team in the NFC looking like they're going to make the playoffs, we'll get to the AFC in a second. The Atlanta Falcons get the win versus Tampa Bay. You got to get your win versus Tampa Bay. But, you know, they are 7-6, but I don't think they're a contender to do anything in the playoffs. They're like your classic, going to get in, going to get wiped out first round.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I'm not convinced that they even make it in. Maybe someone kind of comes in, sneaks up on them, and gets them out. But, you know, the thing about if they make the playoffs and it's kind of a one-and-done scenario, just to, you know, to segue over to the AFC, you know, Shanahan taking a lot of heat in Denver for pulling Plummer while the team was, what, 7-5. You know, they were competitive in the playoff race, still are to this day. He went with Jay Cutler, and obviously the team's now lost two in a row. I think... The thing about that is Shanahan looked at his team. Listen, this is a guy who's a Super Bowl winning coach. He's won Super Bowls. He's won Super Bowls in Denver. And he took a look at what he had and saw, you know what, this is not a Super Bowl winning team. Are we going to make the playoffs? Are we going to be one and done? Is there really a point in that? And I think that's one of the reasons why he made that switch to Cutler. It's not necessarily sacrificing the season, but listen, Cutler could have been a Kurt Warner-like story or a Roethlisberger-like story where the guy comes in, magic happens, they get on a run, and they're actually competitive into the playoffs. But also looking forward to next season, Cutler now has games under his belt. He's not going to be a Phillip Rivers type guy of, you know, week one, he's never taken a live NFL snap before. So I think kind of, you know, that's what Shanahan's thinking was. You know, and now kind of looks like, you know, Denver's not going to make the playoffs. But doesn't matter. You know, what's the point of really being one and done? You know, for a place like Atlanta, probably means a lot more than somewhere like Denver, where, you know, they have that winning history. But you know, I think that's kind of an interesting thing. If you see Atlanta, we just want to get in, and Denver saying, you know what, this is not a Super Bowl winning team. We don't care about just, you know, making the playoffs and getting spanked in round one. You know, we want to come back and be competitive and win a Super Bowl at some point within the next few seasons. And I think that was kind of his thinking on that. I think it's kind of become a little bit clearer.
So BJ, I want to get into the AFC in a second. We'll talk about the team that Denver lost to, but New York 5.5. Just back to this game quickly. New York 5.5. You don't think the Eagles will cover that 5.5 in New York?
You know what? I as far as the bet, I don't mind giving up the 5.5 as long as I'll go to 6.5. But I'm not going to go to 7.
And Atlanta. Let's do this one. We've talked about these two teams. Atlanta going at home versus Dallas -3. I'm taking the Falcons in that one.
I'm going to take the Cowboys to bounce back. I think Dallas is a much better football team than what we saw. And, you know, even Parcells in the press conference said it himself, you know, games just get away from you. You know what I mean? And things snowball and spiral out of control before you know it. You know, a team's hung a 40 burger on you, and there's not much you can do about it. I think we see Dallas bounce back. And, you know, Atlanta doesn't scare me. They don't intimidate me. And I'll lay a field goal on the road.
LaDainian Tomlinson. San Diego now 11-2, three more touchdowns on the weekend. Sort of just got him at the very end. He got two in the last 3 minutes on Sunday. 29 touchdowns this season, NFL record, and he still has three games to go. San Diego 11-2. Phillip Rivers looking like something else, but LT Beach.
Yeah, unbelievable. I think we both agreed like 3 weeks ago just to give the guy the MVP. That it's not even a question. You know, I mean, listen, they have to be the team to beat in the AFC. I mean, they have to be. The way the Colts are playing, the way that they look, you know, New England goes to Miami and gets shut out. Baltimore, I mean, San Diego has to be the team to beat in the AFC right now.
Well, I think not quietly. He's getting all the pub down there, I'm sure. But it just, you know, everybody's doing Drew Brees. But this Phillip Rivers, wouldn't that be something? I mean, it's possible a Phillip Rivers, Drew Brees Super Bowl. Superstars going at it, really. It's possible.
Yeah, no, obviously that would be really funny. You know, Brees played with San Diego last year and then made the move to New Orleans. And I would say out of anyone that might be able to get some MVP votes away from LaDainian Tomlinson, it has to be Drew Brees. I mean, look what he's done there in 1 year. And I mean, let me, you know, the Miami Dolphins and the Saints were the two suitors for Brees, and Miami also made a contract offer to Brees when he was a free agent. And I mean, you got to figure they pursued him a little bit harder, you know, in hindsight, giving Dante the money. Culpepper's injured, hasn't played much of the season, has been absolutely, you know, meant nothing to the team. You got to figure the Dolphins wish that they had maybe pursued Brees a little bit harder.
2 years ago, Dante Culpepper and Drew Brees. Look at what's changed between now and then. Dante Culpepper, arguably the best quarterback in football at that time. You know, he's up there with anybody.
Sure.
And Drew Brees, a nothing quarterback. And look at today. That's football, though, for you. That's a fun thing about football. Kansas City looks like they are in big trouble now. 7-6, still okay, but they're a bit in a jam now. Baltimore. 10-3, a team you definitely don't want to play in the playoffs, and it just shows they kept Larry Johnson out of the end zone. He did get 120 yards rushing against them, but they kept him out of the end zone. They were awesome against that Kansas City offense, which is pretty high-flying. And Baltimore, just quietly, you know, everybody's talking San Diego and Indianapolis. This is a defense. We could be looking at, you know, the high-flying San Diego-New Orleans Super Bowl, or we could be looking at the low-scoring Chicago-Baltimore Super Bowl.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know what? I think that Baltimore likes flying under the radar. I think that you know, they've never really gotten a lot of love at any point through the season, even where they are today. You know, people are still looking. It's like they're looking to look elsewhere. You know, before it was Indy, and then now it's the Chargers, and you know, any other teams may pop up. A lot of people still like the Pats because of what they've done before. I think the Ravens like that role. I think they like being the underdog. And just doing what they need to do. Steve McNair has been a huge addition to that team. And I mean, you know, look at how they were playing last year with Kyle Bowler and just, you know, the quarterback carousel and all the different guys that they've tried there. And just bring a veteran like McNair in and just really get the job done. I think they like being quiet. I think they like not getting the love. I think it makes them angrier and it gives them something to fight for.
BJ, were you like me that when Baltimore signed Steve McNair in the offseason, I thought that was just a nothing free agent signing? I did. I thought he was done.
No, I have the Ravens at 32-1. So obviously I saw something in that signing. You know, I thought, you know, him coming over, I think McNair's a great quarterback. And although he may not put up the stats anymore, he just has this hunger to win football games. You know, Derek Mason came over at receiver, a guy that had been in Tennessee with McNair, so I thought that they'd be familiar with each other and would be able to help him out. I thought Jamal Lewis was going to have a little bit of a larger impact. I thought he was going to bounce back more. But what they've shown is that, you know, they don't really need him to. You know, he's been getting between 60 and 80 rushing yards a game, and just that's all that they need from him, a couple touchdowns here or there, and really almost as a change of pace. And then Mark Clayton's really coming alive there as the really now the primary receiver in Baltimore.
Oh, please.
You had Todd Heap, and I mean, that's a team with a lot of weapons on offense. So, yeah, I disagree with you a little bit that I thought it was a nothing move. But, yeah, I mean, realistically, did I think that they'd be in this position right now? Probably not.
Michael Clayton. The guy caught 187-yard bomb that padded his stats nicely.
Mark Clayton. Michael Clayton,
Mark Clayton
is your receiver who's out for the year.
Michael Clayton, yeah. He out for the year. Does it even matter if he's out for the year? I'm not joking. Miami, 21-0 over New England. Blip on the radar, or does this say something about the Patriots?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, their defense is playing phenomenal. Jason Taylor has really proven once again that he's one of the premier, you know, defensive lineman in the NFL, just really almost a freak. Just, you know, the way his body is, he's tall, he's ripped, he's cut, he's muscular. He's not one of these big fat dudes that you just put on the DL to plug up the run, you know.
Are you dissing Ted Washington?
Yes, I am. Yeah. Ted, as well as many other players. But, you know, I think that they're a much better football team than they've looked in the first half of the season. And so the fact that they're now winning some games, they're now beating some pretty decent teams, it shouldn't really be a surprise. I think that they just faltered right out of the gun because, you know, Culpepper wasn't ready to play. He wasn't healthy. It took 4 or 5 weeks for them to make the change to Harrington. So, you know, I think the team is better than what we saw in the first half of the year. So we shouldn't be surprised that they're, you know, now beating some teams.
And
listen, they could be a strong team next year.
And the one I want to get my money on in Vegas, and every week I think I'm missing the boat here, the Cincinnati Bengals going to 8-5. Granted, they only beat Oakland, and Carson Palmer did throw 3 interceptions, but Chad Johnson, 5-for-101. TJ Houshmandzadeh, 8-for-118 and a touchdown. Rudy Johnson runs for 117 and 2 touchdowns. I know they only played the Raiders, but, you know, I'm still keeping my eye on this Bengal team. I like them.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. I mean, they're really gelling. They finally, you know, it took them a couple weeks to get back to their game plan and get back to what they did so well last year. And, you know, all of a sudden, you know, like you said, they're 8-5, and then they're very much a part of the playoff picture. You know, Monday night they play Indianapolis.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be a really big game, but I almost think it's almost a bad situation for the Bengals because the Colts, I mean, they got to be hungry. They've now, you know, blown 2 chances to clinch the division. You know, Jacksonville won again. So, you know, they got to clinch this thing. They got to close this thing out and wrap it down. And I think that, you know, at home on Monday night, they're going to do that. And it's almost not even a thing. It doesn't even matter who they play. And I think that it's kind of a rough, a tough situation for the Bengals. If they win, I'll be totally amazed. But if they lose, I don't think that, in my mind, that downgrades the Bengals to me. I think that they're a great football team. And listen, we talked about it last week, man. You know, they're probably the one team in the AFC that will have a lower seed that you certainly do not want to meet, because you know they can really go. They can really, you know, go on a run, and they can just put points on the board. And listen, you know, their defense, which has played terrible all season, is all of a sudden playing phenomenal. So you know, I mean, you're now seeing the defense stepping up and the offense coming together and starting to click. So you know, listen, I agree with you. I think this Monday, it's just a tough situation for them to have to play in.
So you're taking the Colts, I take it. Plus three. They're only plus three.
What kind of number you got on that game?
I got three.
Yeah, I think that I'm going to take the Colts. But you know what? I hate the Colts. I've been burned by them a couple times this season. I actually came pretty strong with them this week. I thought they were going to go into Jacksonville and just shut it down, and obviously the opposite took place. So I guess I'm going with the Colts. Just more off the situation than anything else.
All right, BJ, a couple more games here I want to ask you about, and then we got to get a move on here. Not a great schedule this week, I have to say, for football games at this point in the season. Really, the Monday nighter and the Giants-Eagles game personally is really the only one I'm interested in watching right now. Maybe Dallas-Atlanta. Seattle, +9.5 at home versus San Francisco. They look like garbage versus Arizona. They're probably the worst 8-5 team in football right now. I guess I'll just pick Seattle for why not.
I think I officially get the homer call of the week last week when I got all amped up on the fact that the Seahawks, you know, might get healthy, might gel, might click, might do a lot of things and really go on a roll in the playoffs. And then what happens is they come out and stink it up against the Cardinals. So, you know, just goes to show you never know. That's a lot, you know, as far as betting, I think that's a lot of points.
Yeah.
I think San Francisco has been extremely competitive throughout the season, not only throughout the season, but also in divisional games. They played pretty much every divisional game extremely tight this year. And you know, that looks like a lot of points. I don't think there's any question the Seahawks are going to win. Am I comfortable giving up 10? Certainly not.
And the last one is, what about this one? New Orleans +9.5. At home versus Washington. I think what I saw them do on Sunday, I have to take the Saints.
Minus the 9.5.
Yeah, -9.5.
You know what? The Saints are kind of turning into one of those teams, you know, like the Rams of the 90s, where it almost doesn't matter how many points you're giving up or what the over-under is. You know, you're going to take them and you're going to lay it anyways. And, you know, after, like you said, after what you saw last week, after what you've seen this season, I certainly don't have any qualms about giving up 9.5 with New Orleans. I look for them to continue the role. You know, Washington's just done. Terrible football team. We haven't really seen much from Joe Gibbs. And then, you know, great coach of the past and won Super Bowls in the past. But, you know, this is a very different football. Football is different. It's a different game now than when he coached. And, I mean, I don't know. Has the game passed Joe Gibbs by? Is that possible?
I don't know. But, you know, they went from, what was that guy? Steve Spurrier to Joe Gibbs. I mean, pick a normal guy. You know, just pick a low name. Pick a small name guy. Just, you know.
Well, listen, you know, Clint Portis out for the year certainly hurts them.
Yeah, but their quarterback.
Listen, they have a lot of confidence in Jason Campbell, yeah. You know, the rookie quarterback who's now playing, who's now starting after Brunell went down. And, you know, they're obviously in one of those things of all right, let's just play out, let's see what we got for next year, and let's get this quarterback some experience, some in-game experience. I look for the Saints to really take care of Washington with very few problems.
And, BJ, my last thing about the Seahawks, I think their party is over next year. They've had an easy schedule the last few years. Granted, last year they were a dominant football team, but this year they've been so-so. San Francisco's getting better. The Rams, we don't know. They're still not terrible, but the Cardinals are probably going to get a little better next year, especially San Francisco. I think they could take a step next year.
The Rams aren't terrible?
They're not terrible.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah, I said it, so I'll stay with it. But I think Seattle next season, that division's going to sort of take some step forwards, and you know, San Francisco drafted this guy, Vernon Davis, in the first round, a tight end who hasn't done much. You know, I just think that Seattle next season, if they keep playing like the way they are, they're going to fall right back to like a 7-8, 7-9 team, 8-8 team.
Well, and listen, I mean, you know, listen, Arizona's been touted as like the surprise team for 4 years now. They've done nothing with it. But, you know, Leiner looked really good on Sunday. And this kid is, you know, continuing to develop. And with those weapons on offense, with Fitzgerald and Bolden and Edgerrin James out of the backfield, I mean, you got to figure you cannot continually hold this team back. Maybe Danny Green wasn't the right fit. You know, maybe they didn't focus on their offensive line as much as they should have. But you got to figure a new coach is going to come in. A new coach is going to look at what they have and adapt to that and build a winning formula around that. So, I agree that, you know, I think that division is certainly going to get tougher before it gets easier.
And, BJ, just be happy you're not in town to follow this hockey team right now.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, lowest scoring team in the NHL. Awesome. BJ Bash from Las Vegas, Nevada. BJ, thanks as always.
Thank you, my man.
All right, thanks, BJ. Okay, we are going to take our final break, perhaps, right now on Wieners Barbecue, 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Dave Chernichan from News 1130. He was just at a press conference that included maybe the greatest hockey player of all time, Wayne Gretzky. And we'll be right back with Dave Chernichan from News 1130 after this particular bit of music. I just realized I still had my microphone on there. See, Dave, that's why I need a producer.
Well, I thought you could do it all, though.
Yeah, right. Anyways, with us right now, Dave Chernichan. I like to think I can. With us right now, Dave Chernichan from News 1130, you were just at the press conference there, Dave.
Yeah, it was an informal press conference, more of a giant scrum with Ed Jovanovsky, but... you know, you get the feeling talking to him today, it really wasn't his choice to leave, but, you know, that's the way it worked, and now he's a Phoenix Coyote.
Well, yeah, Dave, let's get, were you at a Gretzky press conference, too?
No, it was not.
Oh, there was no Gretzky press conference?
Yeah, there was. I just did not attend it.
Yeah, okay, cool. Dave, back to Ed Jovanovsky, though. So what did he say? Here's a guy, I mean... You know, $32.5 million for 5 years, real tough for the Vancouver Canucks to come up with that kind of money with the salaries they already committed to. Granted, they did decide to commit those salaries as opposed to Jovo. What did Jovo say in that press conference that got you thinking that?
Well, he pretty much stated that he knew his days in Vancouver were done when they gave Luongo the big contract, and Vancouver media knew that as well. And he just said the thing that kind of disappointed him was that the Canucks never came to him with an offer. They didn't even call. And he said after 7 years of service, you know, pretty much that's it. Appointment to him because he felt he gave it all. It is all during his time here in Vancouver, and I think a lot of Canuck fans can agree on that. And you know, I think he was hoping for an offer, any type of offer, just to hear from the Canucks, and it never came. So, I mean, of course, a guy in his position has to take the best offer, and that's what he took in Phoenix.
Ed Jovanovsky's got 16 points this season, Dave, 6 goals, 10 assists, but he got off to a real bad start. So he's come on real strong lately. This is the offensive defenseman. This is the guy who really gave the Canucks a lot of that flash. I always thought Ed Jovanovsky was a crappy player, all the mistakes he made in the defensive zone, the puck giveaways. But last season when he got hurt, this team went down the toilet without Ed Jovanovsky last year.
And I agree. And I think, you know what, Marcus Naslund may have worn the C, but I really think that Ed Jovanovsky was the true inspirational leader behind this team. And he was kind of the glue that maybe molded the rest of the team to Naslund and Bertuzzi and that little clique that they had going. And, you look at it now, man, could the Canucks use a guy like him? You know, never mind his offense, you know, and his defense could be sometimes suspect, But, I mean, just the leadership point of view, the physical play of him throwing a hit or getting him into one of those great fights that he gets in just to help spark the team, you know, I mean, this team is missing a Jovanovski. I, personally, as good as Marcus Naslund is, I would have almost seen him part with Naslund to keep that money for Jovanovski. Then you still have money for Mitchell. Imagine what Jovanovski would look at like on this defense now. Now your top four would be Jovanovski, Olin, Mitchell, Salo. That's a good of four defensemen on any team in this league.
Well, and also, Dave, just sort of looking at what they did last season, hindsight is 20/20, and I personally thought that Dave Nonis did a good job in the offseason. Guessing. You don't know, but Jovo got $6.5 million a year from Phoenix. If you get, you know, say Jovo decides to stay for $5.5 million, you knock off Willie Mitchell, you knock off Jan Boulos, you knock off a Mark Schwenard, and maybe a Matt Cook, maybe you trade him away, or maybe you sign Kessler for the last. You could have kept Ed Jovanovski. Would that have been worth it, looking back in hindsight right now?
Well, I mean, there are so many scenarios, but obviously Dave Nonis's first and foremost goal was to land Roberto Luongo. He's been in love with Luongo. He's talked indirectly about Luongo. And you know what? The Canucks, I mean, let's face it, where would they be this season if they didn't have Luongo in net? To me, he's been the best player night in, night out, even though at times he's let in a shaky goal or maybe one that he should have had, but he knows that. But I mean, more times than not, he's much better than what everybody gives him credit for, and I truly believe that, you know, the Canucks wouldn't be where they are right now unless they had him.
Yeah, getting back to Jovo right now, Dave. Here's the guy's landed. He got all that money, so he took the money. So you can't feel sorry for him. But $6.5 million a year in Phoenix. You know, you go to a team coached by Wayne Gretzky, mm-hmm. Michael Barnett, the agents up there. You know, you've got Owen Nolan coming in, Jeremy Roenick's coming in. And they're not doing very good.
Yeah, it kind of amazes me with how poor Phoenix is doing. You have to wonder if that's the coaching of Gretzky or it's just too many different attitudes and egos in that room. I mean, you look at it. They got a lot of big-name players on that team, and for them not to come together is a little odd. You know, maybe they were maybe the sunshine in Phoenix during the winter kind of spoils them. But I think it's kind of disappointing that they aren't better. I really thought that they would be pressing for first place. I think their goaltending is terrible. I think Curtis Joseph's days are about 3 years behind him, you know. But, hell, I mean, let's face it, if somebody's going to say, hey, how about one more year? I know you're 40, but how about one more year at, I don't know, $900,000 or $1 million?
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to take it. Anybody would take it.
He's not making that money outside of hockey, probably, that's for sure.
Well, I mean, don't forget, he is a college guy.
Yeah.
So.
Michael Pelquist, though, coming in doing a good job for him, 2-0 in three games so far, 2.21 GAA.
Well, they needed a goaltender, and they went out and got one. And, you know, they gave up a lot to get him in Tyson Nash and a draft pick. But on the flip side, you know, when you're desperate for a goalie, especially with goalies at a premium right now in the NHL, you got to pay for it, and that's what they did.
So, and Phoenix, a guy who is a positive, and this could say how bad they're doing this season, George Laroque, 15 points, third on the team in scoring. What's up with that?
No idea. You know, George Laroque, the past couple of years when he was in Edmonton, they started putting him into more of a scoring-type role. And, you know what, Laroque saw the writing on the wall that the league is trying to eliminate the role of the enforcer. And he knows that in order for him to stay in this league and to continue with the big paychecks, he has to produce in more than just a fighting sense, and I think he's done that.
Awesome. And, Dave, you know, do it once a week here. I just want to ask you quickly, and then I want to get into some Canucks and around the league here, is the Canucks on Thursday will be playing the Calgary Flames at home. They lost to them 5-3 in a game in Calgary on Saturday night after the big win versus Carolina on Friday. The Flames, and then they're going to play Minnesota on the Saturday. Then they're going to play Minnesota again on the Tuesday. I mean, these are big games for this team, but when did these games start to get really big? Because it seems like Canucks, I mean, they could be in 11th or 12th place before we blink here if they don't get their act together.
Well, I think we're really starting to see that every 2 points means something for this Canucks team. I mean, sure, we're used to hearing it in a cliche, and we're used to hearing it in all sorts of facets, you know. And we got, you know, as part of the media, we kind of get a little sick and tired of hearing, you know, oh, this is a big 2 points tonight. But every game is huge for the Canucks right now, especially the divisional games where they only have two wins all season, and I believe 10 games already against divisional opponents. Each one of those games is a four-point game. So, I mean, after tonight you get done with Phoenix, yes, it's a conference matchup, which means something, but the next three games against divisional opponents, you have to take advantage of that.
Awesome. And Dave, with the Canucks right now, what have you been seeing of late? Is there any positives we can take out of the fact that on Friday, on Saturday, saw some goals from Jan Bula, saw Mark Schwinnard get a goal, Yannick Tremblay had a bunch of points, Brendan Morrison did the same. Granted, they did go 1-1, they did blow a 3-0 lead against Carolina, they won in overtime, but can we take positives out of the fact that at least these guys are doing something?
I think we can. The power play, which has been so stagnant all year, finally has scored six of the team's last seven goals. They're taking advantage of it, and especially in today's NHL, where there's so many bloody penalties, you have to be able to score on the power play and take advantage of that man advantage, and they've been doing that. I think their defense has been all right. I think when they get guys crashing to the net, it's nice to see Alain Vigneault is not afraid to take a chance. I think under Mark Crawford, you know, there was a real tough, he had a real tough time in giving players opportunities. I mean, we saw it even as late as last year where, you know what, the West Coast Express line wasn't playing all that well, yet they were still out there for the first minute and a half of a power play. And then the Sedins would come on with Anson Carter and bang, it was either a goal or they would create something. Or some good chances, but this year, I mean, you look, it's been stagnant. He's moved Mark Schwinnard onto the power play. He's not a power play guy per se, but that big body at 6'4", 200 and some pounds works in front of the net. You know, the Canucks have been starting to go in front of the net, and you look at Daniel Sedin's goal, or Jan Bulis, or Mark Schwinnard's the other night. They were all from players going to the front of the net because rebounds happen in today's NHL, and that's where the play is, and that's where the goals are.
Because, Dave, really a positive I see out of the Vancouver Canucks right now is they're barely out of the playoff spot. But if you look at these forwards, Mark Schwinnard, Ryan Kesler, Matt Cook, Jan Bulis, Brendan Morrison, at this point of the season, you'd like to think these guys can't really have done much worse than they did, and the Canucks are still barely out of a playoff spot.
And I think that's a testament to good coaching. You know, like I've been reading a lot of Canuck fan websites and blogs and fan forums and all that kind of stuff. And I can honestly say I don't understand why people are on Alain Vigneault for doing the job that he's done. You got a coach that's barely given any workhorses to work with. And frankly, I think he's been able to make mountains out of a molehill. And I think he's done great with the limit and talent that he has to keep the record as close to 500 and floating around that level for as long as he did and has. And I hope it continues for him. He's a fresh face. I know one player told me when I was in the dressing room the other day, I was asking him, so what do you think about the job Vigneault is doing? We're off the record. And he told me that he loves it. He absolutely loves the guy because, unlike Crawford, when Crawford was here, Vigneault isn't afraid to call out his stars if they're not playing well. Crawford never called out Bertuzzi or Naslund or Jovanovski when they struggled, or Kluche, but he was sure very hard on guys like Steve McCarthy when he was here, Brendan Morrison, Josh Green when he was up. You know, a lot of the Nolan Baumgartner was another whipping boy, you know, and now that doesn't really happen. I mean, the guys who are getting the pressure are the guys who are being paid the money to score. And I think that's a good thing because you see a guy, whether it's a Kevin Bieksa or a Sammy Salo, getting as much ribbing as the Sedins and Naslund. And I really like the job Vigneault's doing with this club. It's not his fault that the Canucks are doing or playing the way they are. That's the general manager's fault for not bringing in the proper troops in order to keep this team competitive on a nightly basis.
Awesome. And Dave, the Western Conference, just some general hockey talk right now. The Western Conference in general right now, Carolina was here on Friday. Very entertaining hockey game. We got Washington here. That was also, I didn't see it, but that was also a good game. You know, you're going to have Tampa coming in, Tampa, Atlanta's going to come in later, in Florida. Those are the only Eastern Conference teams we get in town this season. Not to rag on the schedule, we've done that a lot, but why? What is going on here? Why is one out of the top 13 goal scorers from the Western Conference? What is going on right now?
Well, I think it all comes out of New York and Gary Bettman's office with the unbalanced schedule. I think it's terrible. You know, I think it's great that we got to see the defending Stanley Cup champions here in Carolina. I mean, I was just, I admit, I was enthralled with watching Alexander Ovechkin when he was here. I wanted to see what this kid could do. He's phenomenal. Phenomenal hockey player. And I don't think the NHL and their old cronies and the old boys league and Gary Bettman, who is a yes man to the owners when the owners only see the dollar signs instead of what's best for the product, I don't think they understand what kind of disservice they are doing to the league, especially when all the young talent is in the East right now. I mean, give me the names of five young players under the age of 23 who are lighting it up in the West. The only two that I can think of off the top of my head are Dion Phaneuf and Alexander Frolov down in L.A.
How old are the Sedin twins now?
26.
Okay, you know what? They're not exactly guys you're going to pay money to watch play, too.
No, but exciting hockey players. And I think it's sad that I want to see Sidney Crosby as much as you do and any of your listeners do. I want to see him. I want to see what the hype is. I've seen Evgeny Malkin at the World Juniors last year, but I want to see what he can do in the NHL. You know, I want to see Ovechkin every year. I want to see some of the young guys in Florida like Jay Bouwmeester and Nathan Horton. You know, I want to see Patrice Bergeron and Phil Kessel, who is unfortunately out of the Boston lineup right now. But I want to see these guys on a yearly basis, and the fans want to see it. But this is just another way how the NHL shoots itself in the foot with its fans.
Yeah, Dave, is Rick Nash under 25? He's having a bad year, but is he under 25?
Yeah, he's 22 or 23
right now. I'll still put Rick Nash there. Moving on to the league, though. This is where you went, and I want to ask you about this one. TV, they're getting slaughtered. TSN down 18%. The numbers came out. CBC, the early game on Hockey Night in Canada, down 18%. And the late game on CBC, down a third. They got to be getting killed in the States. They decided to go to OLN and have it where, you know, they decided to have a television station that would give them all hockey, give them all the coverage they wanted. Yet, Dave, you go down to the States and you try to find OLN. Everybody's got ESPN. Nobody's got OLN. ESPN giving them practically no coverage at all right now. This league, what does it mean? And what do you know? What do you think it's going to mean in the long run? If their TV ratings don't pick up, and I don't buy the comment that it, you know, people aren't watching regular sports on TV right now. Football's through the roof. Baseball's through the roof. So if baseball's through the roof, you got to figure hockey can follow.
But, well, I mean, don't forget, though, there's also the argument that the NBA's numbers are down immensely as well.
Yeah, but baseball's through the roof.
Well, I mean, but what does hockey have to offer right now? Okay, the American public isn't going to back a Russian hockey player, unfortunately. They don't. They still got the whole communist thing going on. And as good and as awesome as you and me think a guy like Alexander Ovechkin or Evgeny Malkin is, they're not going to back that. Okay? Number two, I understand Bettman wanted the money from OLN because that's what it came down to. Bettman's all about show me the money, okay? But how do you turn down ESPN, which gets into 20 million more homes in the U.S. than OLN?
Is that the number or is it more than that?
It's the number.
Okay, because I was down in California and we found ESPN, no problem. You're watching ESPN. You know, the place I was at, it's just regular cable stuff. They've got ESPN Classic, ESPN 2.
Oh, everything's ESPN.
Yeah, and OLN, no, not happening at all. And you know what, Dave?
It's doing the league a disservice.
Absolutely.
Plus, I mean, don't forget, the games are terrible now.
Yeah, and you don't get on SportsCenter, too.
Exactly. But, I mean, don't forget, the games are terrible. okay? Nobody wants to see a parade to the penalty box.
Yep.
The worst thing the NHL did was, yes, I understand they had to crack down on obstruction. And to do that, there had to be more penalties called, okay? But the problem is, okay, as long as... I got somebody trying to call in here. But as long as the penalties are being called and the referees are making themselves part of the show rather than letting the players be a part of the show and take over the show and dominate the show, okay, the league isn't doing anything for its players. And it's horrible. You talk to the players on record, they'll say, well, you know, we got to get rid of the clutching and grabbing and all the stick work. I think it's good. But the minute you put down your microphone and you talk to a player one-on-one, he'll tell you, it's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. You know, all these bloody penalties. I mean, I'm sorry. I don't find it interesting when you see each team having 12 power plays a night.
I agree with you. And you know, what they've done, Dave, is with the game, they've given up the greatest game you can have. It's the greatest game you can have is a physical, hard-checking, fast, hard-hitting game with fights. The great hockey game, it's like, can never happen again, it seems like.
Well, and there's another issue, okay? Every time I see the highlights of a good fight in some American arena, say Philadelphia, New York Islanders, okay, I don't see anybody sitting down. Why are they trying to eliminate the role of the enforcer and the role of fighting in hockey? People love it. The fans love it. Okay? You go to minor league games in the States, they promote the hell out of fighting, whether it's the East Coast League or the West Coast Hockey League or whatever. They promote the hell out of fighting because they know that's what fans bring in. But the NHL is so politically correct. We can't have fighting, you know? I mean, it's brutal. It's brutal. Now, I'm not saying bench-clearing brawls, but let's face it. I mean, how many times have you gone on YouTube? I know I've done it a bunch of times, to watch that Philadelphia-Ottawa playoff game from a couple years ago where each team was left with like four or five guys on the bench by the time the final game went because everybody was fighting in that game.
I've gone on, typed in Bob Probert. I love watching Gino Ochik against the St. Louis Blues running around with his shirt off. I love watching, there was one I saw that was pretty crazy, the Broad Street Bullies taking on the Islanders in Long Island that was completely out of control.
No, and you're right. I mean, Google gets, you look at how many hits are on hockey fights on YouTube.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and it's amazing. I go there. I know a lot of NHL enforcers go there, okay, because they want to see, you know, maybe learn some techniques, see who they might be battling. But I think it's sad that the NHL is taking away from the game what has made the game popular. Yes, speed has made the game popular. Yes, finesse makes the game popular. Showcasing your players' talents makes the game popular. But putting 20 or 30 penalties a night on the score sheet doesn't make it popular, okay?
Yeah.
Why was Bob Probert one of the most popular players? Why was Ty Domi popular when he was a Ranger? Why was Basil McRae one of the most heralded Minnesota North Star players?
Well, there's another one on YouTube which is beautiful, was this player on, I think it was St. Who did Tom Barrasso play for all the time? Did he ever play on St. Louis?
Tom Barrasso?
Yeah, it was Tom Barrasso.
He was with Pittsburgh and Buffalo.
Okay, then it was Buffalo. It was Buffalo. And this Buffalo player went and hit Steve Yzerman. And Probert was on the ice, and the announcers kept saying, because the player kept trying to tie Yzerman up after the hit, Probert's going to get him. Oh, he started fighting Yzerman. That's what he did. And Yzerman hadn't even really dropped the gloves. And Probert just went after him, and Barrasso tied up Probert. And Probert just started beating on Barrasso. And then Barrasso backed off right away, and then he sort of went at Probert again, and Probert just went, come on. Come on, if you tie me up, we're fighting. And then Probert went and found that guy who had hit Yzerman and just decked him. And that's how you protect your stars, whether you like it or not, Dave.
Well, you know what? I know a lot of people are, you know, I mean, the fighting in the game, I will say this, okay? Most, I would say about 90% of all media members who complain about fighting in the league have never either A, played hockey in their life, or B, been in a hockey fight in their life. Okay, I've done both. Okay, and let me tell you, people don't understand what makes a hockey fight happen unless you've been in it. Okay, and you don't understand. The players love doing it. I mean, nobody likes getting hit in the face. Nobody likes being punched or thrown to the ice or having a nose broken or anything like that. But it's part of the game. Why eliminate what makes the game popular? That's what doesn't make sense.
Terrific. Thanks, Dave. Dave Churchhead from News 1130. Dave, love to go on, but we are out of time, and I do appreciate it, as always.
Happy Hanukkah to you. Merry Christmas to the rest of your audience out there.
That's pretty much what it is. Dave Churchhead, Merry Christmas to you, too.
Thank you.
When does Hanukkah start is my question.
You're supposed to know.
I am supposed to know. 15th to 25th. It is the 15th. So happy Hanukkah. And if, you know, this is my quick Hanukkah story. Is in high school, there was a Christmas tree, right? And a girl complained. And next thing I know, I walk to school and we've got a Hanukkah bush. I was embarrassed. There's no such thing. No, we shouldn't. Yeah, exactly. Get a menorah. Light some fire. Burn down the school. We should have had. There is no such thing. If you want one, fine. But I believe, and I'm pretty sure I'm right on this one, there is no such thing as a Hanukkah bush. It doesn't exist. It's a stupid story I just told, but we had no time. Anyways, Eric with Flex Your Head is coming up right now. Eric, do you want my Elvis or Hank Williams?
Well, yeah, Elvis is preferable, but I would like to point out that yeah. as far as wool caps go, Daryl, dude,
yeah.
Your wool cap is basically the most fucking bitchin' wool cap I've ever seen in my life.
My Montreal Canadiens?
Well, then it's like super big and loose.
Well, because it's over headphones right now. It's over headphones.
You're stretching it.
That really big.
Anyways, I'd like to thank my guest, BJ Bass from Nevada, Las Vegas, Vern Knopp from the UBC Thunderbirds basketball team, and of course, you just heard him, Dave Churchhead from News 1130. Eric with Flex Your Head is coming up right now.
We're caught in a trap. I can't walk out because I love you too much, baby. Why can't you see what you're doing to me? When you don't believe a word I'm saying, we can't go on together with suspicious minds. Mine. So if an old friend I know, shove it up your nose just by to say hello, would I still see suspicion in your eyes? Here we go again, whoa, asking where I've been. You can't see the tears I realize. Suspicious mind, and we can't build our dreams on suspicious mind. Oh, let our love survive. Oh no, I'll dry the tears from your eyes. Let's don't let a good thing die. Oh no, 'cause honey, you know I'll never lie to you.